The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. I want to thank Evans General Contractors, Chiringa, and Peachtree Government Relations for being a part of the show in 2023. My guest today is Stephen Lawson. Stephen, welcome in.
Ben, great to be here.
Now you've been a couple of times, but you've been sitting on the couch that you can't see right now, and so you've been eyeballing me as I've been interviewing your I would call them candidates, clients, friends, all of the above.
I feel like I've got your tactics down now that I've been observing for a few sessions.
So. We'll see. You know, politicians are hard because you don't. If you like them, and I don't really have people on the show that I don't like. You try to make them sound as positive and uplifting as human beings as possible, and while maintaining the integrity of somewhat asking the question that might be difficult, guys in the consulting world, you'd be like, what in the hell were y'all thinking? And you'll answer it because you've lived it and moved on.
Lived it, breathed it, done it. I feel like since 2020 here in this state, feels like it's just been one long, giant, never-ending campaign.
It has been, especially when you get to like 9-week runoffs, and it's like, well, I was really counting on being, you know, in Aspen around MLK Day, and it's like, no, I've got to do a post-mortem here on all this stuff, and then the next cycle starts up, I don't know, what, like 3-4 days later?
Immediately, yeah, pretty much.
Where did you grow up?
So, yeah, I'm originally from Tallahassee, Florida, so grew up there, went to school down in Gainesville, so, you know, that may rustle some feathers with some of your audience members, but...
Can we stop there for just a second? Gainesville, Florida, on a Saturday in November, when the rest of the SEC has gotten cold, it's my favorite stadium.
It's pretty awesome.
And I say this with 100% sincerity, and I'll wolf if you take me to a UGA game. I'm not like a fan, but like if the right person asked me, I'd put the disguise on and smile. And I would love it and have a great time. For my money, when you walk in to whatever it is.
Ben Hill Griffin.
Yeah, and it's a hole. What you don't know is it's a hole in the ground. And half the stadium goes down from where you walk in, and half the stadium goes up. There is nothing like it. It's loud as hell. Like, Georgia is a little too open. It's a little too open. And it just is what it is.
I will say, I'd put the Swamp up against any fan experience anywhere in the country. I mean,
awesome.
SEC, you know, obviously the Swamp, Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. On a Saturday night, gets pretty rowdy as well, but it's different.
But Gainesville has the scenery of Fort Lauderdale and West Palm Beach, and Baton Rouge has the scenery of
different vibe.
Lafayette, Louisiana.
Yeah,
it's not the same. But nothing touches Athens. Georgia girls are best in the world.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know if I can argue too much with that.
Well, so you go to school in Gainesville. I've always wanted to go on my rant about how awesome Gainesville is, and so I'll take hell for this forever.
There you go. Yeah, I can follow that sword for you. But yeah, I came back to Tallahassee. Sort of got my start in 2012 working for the state party down there. Did some communications research consulting for a couple years, working for some guys who used to work for Rick Scott. And then I sort of parlayed that into working on then Governor, now U.S. Senator Rick Scott's 2014.
Pretty successful guy.
Yeah, pretty successful. Obviously, both in business and in politics. Worked on his 2014 reelection campaign. doing rapid response communication stuff, and that's sort of where I got the itch to do all of that stuff. Worked in his administration, his official office, for about a year as his director of research and writing, doing a lot of speech writing, and then his administration for, you know, 3 years doing economic development at Enterprise Florida, which is sort of the GDEC of Florida, as well as Visit Florida, the tourism arm of the state. Had a great job at Visit Florida, was very comfortable. And then
you're like the CVB of the whole
state.
That's
right, yeah, which is obviously very important for Florida, you know, number one industry.
By a lot.
Yeah, by a lot. And then was really happy, and then got a call from a friend, said, hey, I want you to come work for this guy named Ron DeSantis. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I've got a great job here. You know, threw all my stuff in my car, drove to Orlando, worked as the governor's 2018 communications director for his campaign. And as they say on that one, the rest is history.
I want to ask you about him, because we're going to hear a lot more about him. Not that we have not, as Americans at this point, heard a hell of a lot about him.
Yeah.
He seems like an incredibly bright, polished, engaging leader who doesn't take any crap.
Yeah. I mean, probably one of, if not the smartest people you'll be in a room with. You know, if you walk into a room with the governor, you know, you better have your stuff buttoned up and ready to go. And you better know exactly what you're talking about. Because just the level, and I think that's something that maybe has gotten missed in, you know, all of the profiles that have been written on him, a lot of which are ridiculous. But just the level of his intellect, Yale, Harvard, I mean, obviously he can, and I think there were a number of reports right during the pandemic where, you know, he would read reams of data and just absorb all of that and be able to make decisions based on that. And I think that's one of the reasons he got the pandemic so right. Governor Kemp got it right as well, but, you know,
he got it the rightest.
He did. Yeah, he did. And, you know, I think that's really just him, right? Working the data, understanding what was going on in real time, understanding that, hey, this is a virus that is disproportionately affecting elderly people, right? Of which Florida has a lot of them.
Tons of them.
Yeah. And I think so he marshaled resources and made decisions based on that information. And I think he still does probably not get enough credit for some of those decisions.
The thing that, if I had a criticism, and I don't know that I don't think criticism is the right word, because it's hard to criticize anybody who wins a reelect in what is essentially a swing state by 20 points. And I feel like he fights a lot. And I don't know that, and maybe you have to, and maybe there's something to it. I love Governor Kemp because he doesn't always fight.
Yeah.
And I like them both in their shared and respective roles for different reasons at the same time. And I think DeSantis gave Kemp the cover to make that decision. And he would probably push back on me, and he'd be justified to do it, about with respect to COVID. But it's like the Don't Say Gay bill, and it's everything. It's like fighting Disney. It seems to me like if you want to do that, and you start now, or essentially a year ago, and you are actually going to run for president, and I think he will, and you don't have to answer that, but I think you probably think he will, you're going to spend every single day fighting. And I'd go to the beach for about 45 days and know that, that fight's going to find me. I don't have to go find it all the time.
Yeah. Well, and I think the beauty of just that situation, they both govern so differently, but there's also a lot of similarities. You know, people forget back in 2018, they were both in very similar political positions, right?
Marginal victors.
Yeah. And sort of, they were in terms of the primary, sort of back in the pack. They were underdogs in those primaries, right? With Governor DeSantis going up against Adam Putnam, this well-funded establishment politician, this force in Florida, and sort of coming out of left field, you know, you had Ron, you know, and a lot of that was getting him on Fox News, obviously getting the attention of the former president, but very similar to Brian Kemp, right? You know, who was, I think by all accounts, right, in third or fourth place in a primary.
And Casey Cagle is one of my best friends.
Right. And sort of came up with these very catchy ads. I think that was part of it. Sort of shot way up. And then, you know, won in the runoff. And then both went on in the general election to defeat two Democrats of two darlings of the Democratic Party. Right. Two juggernauts on the fundraising side. And two, I think.
One of them got really rich. The other one may wind up in jail.
Right, he got really rich and then got really poor very quickly. I think the other one is just on her way to getting poor, hopefully. You know, as we speak, but you know, and there's both were, you know, Florida, Georgia on the front end of opening back up in terms of the pandemic and the economy, and both have benefited significantly from those decisions. So their styles are very different, but their paths and some of the decisions they've made, I think, have both been politically astute, and they've both benefited from them.
So in the last election cycle, and I will give Stephen Lawson all the credit in the world for this, and Megan Hansen is the one who, when I said, I'd like to get Tyler Harper, and she said, Tyler says to call Stephen. I don't really know Stephen, but here's his cell phone number. And dude, anybody you could bring through here to be on my show, you did, and I will always be grateful to you for it. And in fact, I'm sure down the line, had it's a funny story. We had Burt Jones do a read for my Spotify ad. So if you didn't pay for the Spotify subscription, and we sent it all over the state of Georgia, and he didn't talk about running for office. I mean, Burt Jones got millions of impressions for a couple hundred bucks.
If you were a Burt Jones Spotify voter, please contact Ben Burnett, because I'd love to hear that story.
But I owe you an immense debt of gratitude for bringing those guys in. And I think you're just a guy who sees, like, if you're not at the very top of the ticket and you're on the ballot with a, you know, a big personality in a United States Senate race, it's like you're fighting for air on to some degree. And it sounds ridiculous to say that as the lieutenant governor. And you're like, yep, we'll make it work. We will make it work. We'll take everything we can do. And I will always be grateful to you for that. How did you get to know Lieutenant Governor Jones and Commissioner Harper? Because it's January and I had to put them in the present tense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I think just through mutual connections, you know, one of the things, you know, we haven't talked much about this, but, you know, sort of after 2020, you know, I was sort of helping former Senator Loeffler get her organization, Greater Georgia, off the ground, which, by the way, kudos to her. You know, I think she's done a tremendous job kind of building up an infrastructure that, quite frankly, was needed and necessary in this state. And so proud of the work that she's continued to do. But at the same time, I was doing that, was getting calls from other people, you know, in terms of just helping with messaging and PR and communications and those earned media tactics that you talked about that are so important, but so often overlooked.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they're critical in those down ballot races. So, yeah, you know, both Tyler and Burt reached out to me and, you know, spent the last year and a half helping them build out their message, build out their brand, you know, reach voters in different and unique ways across the state. And, I couldn't be prouder of the work that they've both put in, you know, 16, 18 hour days coming and doing things like this to talk to voters where they're at and in unique platforms that, you know, in this day and age, in this dynamic media and news cycle that we live in, this ecosystem, finding those ways and turning those levers is, I think, more important than ever.
So to the point of when I got the results back off a handful of Spotify ads and my primary, I won't say my primary, my largest demographic is women who listen to Taylor Swift that are 35 to 44 years old. And if you looked at Georgia and you said, what is the stake in the ground that Republicans have lost, that they have no reason to have lost, I would tell you that it is moms going to football practice or baseball practice or whatever, and they want to know who somebody is. And I think that that is a huge, because it is, you've run on a scale that I can't imagine. You've run races on a really small scale. I do that, but you get to do that when you go on somebody's doorstep and you spend 10 minutes with them and you ask them for their vote. Like, you can't do that if you're running statewide an agriculture commission, but you can do a 30-minute interview and talk about how you grew up. That's all they want.
That's right. And especially now, and what you're getting at is that that behind the curtain, that real sense, that raw, okay, who is this person that I'm going to put my name next to a ballot on? And I think we saw this last election, and we can dive more into that, but how important that is in a state like this, right? Where in this day and age where you've got TV ads and mailers and all of these things that so many people think are fake and not real, having that real touch, that real voice, that raw sort of unfiltered version of a candidate, I think still means something.
And we, you know, and you guys were, you can ask me, we talked about to Tyler Harper about marijuana usage, mm-hmm. and we talked to Burt Jones about Donald Trump. And if you look at the fact that if there is a boat anchor in the state of Georgia around the Republican Party, it's Donald Trump. But I gave Burt the opportunity to talk about why. Yeah. And people don't, it's so easy to cast aspersions over 15 or 30 seconds with a 501c4. Right. But if you hear what he has to say about it, it makes complete sense. And I think that's all that people are really asking for that want to engage with a candidate in the long form is like, I don't agree with Stephen. I don't agree with you on everything. And you for sure don't agree with me on everything. But if I can give you a logical explanation when people, reasonable people, can disagree, you're like, well, okay. I had Cole Muzio on and we talked. I said, I think school choice is horrible. And he was like, why? And I said, I'll tell you why. Because I buy my house in a specific location for a specific reason. And you can call that whatever you want to call it. I said, I don't want you to dilute my school district. He was like, well, I mean, I understand why you feel that way. I just disagree. I was like, that's fine. Like, it's that conversation about having an in-depth look. Talk to me about your and I know we're going backwards. Talk to me about your work with Senator Loeffler and how you got to know her.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I sort of
before Greater Georgia, because we'll get there too.
Yeah. You know, got a similar call to the one that I got about Ron. You know, at the time I had you know, was engaged to my now wife, who's from Nashville, and being in Tallahassee, I think, you know, we were sort of both, you know, I was looking to get to a bigger city, sort of looking, you know, somewhere either Nashville or close to her, and got a call, hey, the governor of Georgia's thinking about appointing this woman to the United States Senate. Are you interested in moving to Atlanta to come help her out? And I was like, yeah, I could do that. And
sure.
Sure.
Is she worth three commas worth of money?
Yeah. No, I mean, it wasn't about the money necessarily. It was really about an opportunity to go work for somebody. I think at a pivotal time that was in our country's history. And, you know, certainly, you know, first of all, just proud of who she became and the work that she did in that race. You know, I think one of the things that people gloss over or don't realize is she got thrown in the deep end.
Absolutely. If anybody ever did.
She got thrown into the deep end, and she, I would say she learned how to swim in the deep end. And you know, the how far she came from those early days, you know, having just been appointed, to having to stand up an official office, to having stand up a campaign, to having to, you know, untie all of her business stuff, to doing that, to getting what I thought so much better on the stump and in interviews and all of these appearances, wading through a very challenging primary, you know, which I know you're aware of, you know, to getting to all the way to the goal line, and to have your quarterback spike the football, you know. That was the frustrating part for me and all of that is just to see how much she gave.
The quarterback being?
The former president.
Okay, I was making sure.
Yeah.
I was like, I was like, Brian Kemp, I've never seen him really football.
No. The governor was being a cheerleader on the sideline. He was
stuck.
Yeah. But again, and you and I, you know, I know have talked about this. She could have literally taken her football and gone home.
Absolutely.
She could have
done. Did you steal that analogy from me?
Anything else. I did not. She could have done anything else, but she decided to stay in the game, to continue to invest her time, her money, her effort, her resources to help build the infrastructure that I think was in part, you know, helpful this past cycle. And I think she's going to continue to do that and continue to be a voice in a party in this state where we need leadership.
So. Well, if you look, there's a distinct advantage as a former elected official in a federal office. Like, people will always go listen to Sam Nunn.
Yeah.
People will not always go listen to Roy Barnes. And so to take your status as a former United States senator, like, it always means something. And I've heard, you know, I've heard a former governor say, man, when I'm the former governor, I can't hail a cab outside of the Capitol in the state of Georgia. But to that point, she deserves an immense amount of credit for spending every day finding people who cared and going around and raising money and awareness. And, you know, it wasn't a foregone conclusion. And I'll even give her a lot of credit for continuing to show up after November when it was Herschel Walker. And she doesn't have to say anything about candidate quality or anything like that. Like, right, wrong, or indifferent, she didn't, like, stop. And I saw Katie Britt, who came to town, and like, I mean, if you guys don't know, if there's somebody that you should go follow on social media that I think is just an absolute superstar that you haven't met yet, it's probably her, the senator from the great state, but not as great a state as Georgia.
That's right.
From Alabama, because she's a pro. Yeah. But having people like that and continuing to fight, even I respect people who fight like hell and know that there's a better than a puncher's chance that they're still going to lose. And every single day seemed to matter to her. I'd love to get her on. Can you make that happen?
Yeah, I think we can put in a good word.
You think? What, as you see, talk about your, I want you to go ahead. You're done running campaigns for at least the next 3 weeks. Unless there's a special election that just transpires in March.
That's right.
Talk about your new firm and your business partner.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I think Cody Hall, who is heading up the governor's political operation, and I have been friends for a number of years, really since I came to Georgia. You know, worked obviously working for Kelly and Cody working for the governor. You know, established a friendship and a, you know, professional working relationship that I think was really strong. And, you know, we started talking a few months back about just the landscape in Georgia and our skill set in the PR and communications field and what we felt like were unique and different assets that we could bring to the state that, again, is in desperate need of things like that, right? Not just in a vacuum, but because of the political importance that the state is and the state is going to continue to be. And so, yeah, a few weeks back, we were excited to launch Full Focus Communications, which is going to be doing, you know, political, corporate, nonprofit, PR and communications for some great clients. We've had a tremendous couple weeks getting off the ground, a lot of really good feedback. And we're excited to bring value add to people where again, that space is so critically important.
I want to ask you, so in recent weeks, we've seen the governor fill out paperwork with the Federal Election Commission, or the FEC, as insiders go. And, you know, I
raised a few eyebrows.
I was one of them. I was like, damn, that didn't take long. What do you think the purpose is behind that? You like that just open-ended?
Yeah, just right to the point. I think, you know, first of all, backing up, what Governor Kemp did this past cycle, you know, and we talk a lot about what Ron did in Florida, 19 points. I mean, as someone who
grew up, it's astounding.
It would have been unthinkable 10 years ago. I mean, it, you know, 6 years ago, you know, as someone who grew up there, to say, hey, there's going to be a Republican governor who wins in a midterm election by 19 points in the state. I would have laughed at you.
Where a third of it speaks Spanish as a first language.
To win Miami-Dade County, to win Duval County, to win Pinellas County, that is, it's unthinkable, right? So credit, you know, there, that's a historic win. But maybe not quite on the same level, but almost, is the margin that Brian Kemp won Georgia by. Because what I tell people is that, you know, if you look back at 2016, Florida and Georgia were in very similar spots politically, demographically,
yeah,
on the registration side. You know, Florida sort of went one way and Georgia sort of went another way. And for all of Stacey Abrams' faults, you know, I obviously disagree with her politically on virtually everything, but she showed that she was a very effective organizer, very effective at voter registration.
Very.
And she made this, I think, in part, she made this state much more competitive. So for Brian Kemp to win by 7.5 percentage points, whatever the final margin was,
sizable.
It is a demonstrable and really, you know, tremendous win, I think, in Georgia. You know, so I, given the context of that and looking around the country, you know, Georgia, Florida, I mean, these are states that are a little bit of an outlier from what happened on November 8th. And I think there is a platform for the governor. And again, I've said this, I've been on record saying this, whether that's running for the U.S. Senate in 4 years, whether that's entertaining things in 2024, or whether that's just continuing to be a really good governor and helping candidates on the federal level take what he did in Georgia and try to replicate it and try to build that out. I think that's the purpose of that federal PAC. And look, I think that it gives them options to look at. And right now the governor deserves all of them.
And that money, so for those of you playing at home, is not interchangeable. You can't just roll from state governor where you can take a check from, you know, the shady store by your house. Like that doesn't, you can't do that in a federal election. So there's a different set of rules, and one of them is a lot less Wild West than the other.
That's true.
Well, what do you guys see? Like, who are, if you look at rising stars, people that you have your eye on, things that they're doing, you know, around the state or around the country, who are they? Because you know this business better than anybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, selfishly, you know, if we're talking about Georgia, I've got to plug my two guys, Burt Jones and Tyler Harper.
What did you do for them?
Yeah. So, you know, really, obviously, I served as senior advisor for both of them, you know, day in, day out on the campaign side, you know, talking through messaging, talking through PR, making sure, you know, their stump speeches were coming off well and authentic and genuine, things that we talked about, booking them interviews, right? Getting them, you know, in front of as many people as possible on that sort of earned media scale, right? Whether it's op-eds, press releases, talking points, just making sure that they were all, you know, one of the things that I always pride myself on, I want the guys that I work or the girls that I work for to be in the best position to succeed every time they go out, whether it's in front of a crowd, an audience, a donor meeting, whatever. I want them to be prepared and confident to succeed. And I think that's sort of what, you know, in a nutshell, the value that I provided to them. I think that's the work that Cody and I are going to continue to do. And I think that sort of set them up. So, you know, I think both of them, right, you know, looking down the road 4 years, 8 years, I think both of Tyler Harper, Burt Jones are going to continue to be forces. I would say on the national level, I think there's a number. Obviously, we've talked about Governor DeSantis. You know, I think
goes without saying
that's a big one.
Why does the president hate former President Trump hate him? Because he's a selfish prick.
How long
prick.
Do we have?
Is that what it is?
No, I mean, I think the brand that Ron has built in Florida is extremely and wildly successful. I think the former president has a lot of issues with anyone that does that. I don't think that this is a thing about Ron. I think he is jealous and envious of anybody that has success. I think the same thing is true of Brian Kemp. I think Brian Kemp defied Trump in a much bigger way than Ron DeSantis did. I mean, he took everything that Donald Trump had, everything that he threw at him, went in a primary, held his head high, did not shake, did not stutter, did not equivocate, stayed the course, beat his primary opponent, who was effectively Donald Trump, by 50 points, and went on to beat the darling of the Democratic Party, who raised hundreds of millions of dollars, not just once, a second time, decisively by 7.5 points. And when we talk about national political figures, that's a pretty compelling story to tell.
To do something different.
So he's definitely there. I'm a big Tim Scott fan. I think the world of Senator Scott. I think he is going to be a force to be reckoned with, not just because of, his story and his background, but just his political savvy and his ability to raise money. I think is something that's going to be an asset that's very valuable in that 2024 conversation.
Do you think that the field, look, you don't know, and I don't know. Do you think the field, knowing that, I think really, really high profile politicians get a God complex that it doesn't work without me. And the truth is that it will always work without any of us because somebody else will take the vacuum. Do you think that the field stays? I don't think Donald Trump winds up being on the ballot in 2024 unless he is that petty and jealous, to use your word, that he won't let anybody else have it, which is a very real possibility because I know a former United States senator that also ran for governor who told me that he 100% knew that if he was on the ballot against Joe Biden, he would lose. So why is he doing it? It's got to be your point. It's petty and jealous, and he doesn't want anybody to have the attention, and he's willing. This is why I will never. There's two reasons why I will never vote for Donald Trump again, and I don't care who it's against. January 6th, when you guys ask about the people that are out, I'm one of them. And they're, for the Republicans sitting at home, when you take 4% of the people off the board, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over. So you're not going to win. And yes, I would vote for Biden over Donald Trump because I love America enough to let that man have the keys again. You won't say anything, and I don't blame you. And that may be suicide for me down the road. I actually think I'm right in spades because I think that's what people really want. He's not in his head. But if you pull back the curtain, do you think that there is more than those two, or do you think that Tim Scott, who is going to get his day in the sun, and Marco Rubio, who has wanted his day in the sun since he was born, do you think that those guys say, these are the two right people to fight it out if we want to get rid of him once and for all?
I think it's going to be a more complicated and drawn-out process than that. But that being said, I don't disagree with you that there is a strong possibility that that ends up being the scenario that we're in. I just think there's going to be timing on a lot of this, I think, is going to be really interesting. I don't disagree with you about the former president. You know, I think as we sit here, he is unelectable.
He is. And there's nothing he can do to undo that.
That's correct. And so, but, you know, whether he ultimately stays in or not, I don't know the answer to that question. But I think what you're seeing, you know, is sort of, and there was fresh polling this morning, you know, to kind of validate this, is that people are increasingly, right, day by day, ready to move on. And I think that base of support, and I'll give you a perfect example. We did a poll for the Super PAC, which for the Herschel Walker Super PAC in the runoff immediately sort of after the general election, that told the whole story. It had Donald Trump's image at 36 favorable, 56 unfavorable.
Which is drastic.
It's unwinnable. Right. Let's be very clear. And it had Brian Kemp's image at 60-33, which is also unbelievable in a state like Georgia that is so inelastic. For the governor to have that positive of an image, I think is, again, a testament to him. But every day that goes by, I believe the base support for Donald Trump is waning. It is chipping away. And you know, there's been all of this talk, is Donald Trump going away? And people are always looking for that finite, final moment. And I've always said that I don't think if it does end up happening, I don't think that's the way that it's going to happen. I think it's going to be a slow turn, a slow evolution. And when you have well-liked candidates, well-liked conservative candidates in the wings that he has routinely attacked in Ron DeSantis, in Glenn Youngkin, in Brian Kemp, it hastens that process.
Sure.
And I think that's what we're seeing. And now, look, all of that to say, that could change. That could change. But I don't think that the final result, I just don't believe that Donald Trump will be on the ballot as the Republican nominee in 2024.
As you guys build, one of the things that I have said and continue to say, and I'm right, even I've sent people to you raising money for the Herschel Walker effort into the United States Senate that I didn't feel awesome about. But that's like you can hate me because I'm on the team. I'm on the team. And plenty of the people that you surround yourself with are not that happy with me right now. But
that's fine.
It's also never going to change.
Keep them honest.
But when you look, the state of Georgia is two states. And I won't even say it's a metro issue in a rural, to be unfair with our like words we throw around, it's unfair. The future of leadership in the state of Georgia has, and I've said it repeatedly, and I'm biased because I live there, it has to pass the Woodstock, Brookhaven, Alpharetta litmus test, because Brian Kemp in November won four precincts east of Georgia 400 in the city limits of Alpharetta, and Herschel Walker won zero.
That's right.
And the tail of the tape was you didn't have to look at anything else to know what was going to happen when he couldn't take it outright on election day. So when you look at your clients and your messaging, are you looking there first knowing that you have to – the rest of the state can get in line if the money and the message is the right thing? And that's not to say a rural person, to use an unfair word, can't win in those areas. I think Burt Jones hung up not as impressive a number as Governor Brian Kemp – but an impressive number.
That's right.
To show you that it can be done.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And so, I mean, a few things there. And I would say, as someone that lives in Brookhaven, like, Brookhaven's like gravy. Like, if you can get Brookhaven, like,
Bonus territory.
Yeah, that's bonus territory. But yeah, I mean, look, it's the quote-unquote Milton County, right? It's Sandy Springs, it's Roswell, it's Alpharetta, it's Johns Creek. Like, that cluster, to me, showed, if you go back and look in November, I think Brian Kemp won that area, right? 9 or 10 percentage points. Herschel lost that area by 9 or 10. We're talking about a 20-point swing in one of the most populous areas of the state. That's a big deal. When you're talking about Forsyth County, South Forsyth County, very business friendly, but very diverse community. Right. You've got to be someone that has a message that can resonate with those people. When we talk about, and you can go down the list, Coweta County, Fayette County, Paulding County, right? Parts of Hall County, you can go on and on down the list. That's what 2024 is going to come down to, are those areas. I think that's a big part. You know, the other thing that I look at is sort of the growing population in Savannah. Chatham County, I think is it going to be a Democrat county? Yes, but the margins there matter.
It's 4 points, man. If you can swing it, it makes a difference.
And when you're talking about, it is one of the fastest growing areas, not just in the state, but in the entire region in the Southeast, that's an important part, right? Bryan County matters. Effingham County matters. Those places that I think the governor did extremely well, and I think he laid that blueprint. You know, and look, when we step back and look at 2024, this is where the rubber is going to meet the road. I would argue there's 3, 4, maybe 5 states that are going to decide who the next president is. And I would say there's 3 major ones. It's Arizona, it's Pennsylvania, and it's here. And this is going to continue to be the epicenter of the political universe, whether we like it or not.
I think for your business, you probably like that.
It's going to have its benefits, I think.
Well, Stephen, man, is there anything you want to part with that I didn't ask you? Because I feel like I don't know how long we've talked, which is usually a good sign that we've had a good one. Everybody else I've had today, I've put on the clock to make sure I got where I need to.
There you go.
Best of luck to you, man. We're friends, so it's not like a thing. Any parting thoughts? Any wisdom for the people at home?
No, I mean, I think continue to be involved and engaged, and like I said, I mean, this state is going to be, you know, the epicenter of a lot of news and a lot of conversations, not just for the next 2 years, but I think for the next 4 years and beyond. And you get a front row seat.
So. If you told me 2 guests that I needed to get, who are they?
Has the governor come?
No.
I think he's probably up there on the list. I would say former Senator Loeffler's another one.
I would love to have, and this will never happen, I would love to have 2 hours of his time, because it's the soundbite.
I bet he'd like to have 2 hours of his own time.
No, well, you know, I had Burt Brantley, and wonderful guy. And he was like, dude, you can unpack somebody really, really well. And to the point that if you want the moms in minivans, which the governor does not struggle with in 2022, you have to be able to. It's not, and I don't hate him for keep chopping and hardworking Georgians, and like I get all of that, but to show people the depth of your thoughtfulness and intelligence it's underrated, man, because people can hate. They hear you for 20 seconds. It's like, he pointed a gun at Joey, you know? And I'll never forgive him for that.
Part of the governor's appeal is that, and this is something you can never take away from him, he's his own man, and he's going to do what he feels is right and what's best and what fits him. And guess what? To our earlier conversation, in a world of fake, inauthentic people and things, Brian Kemp is actually the real deal. And I think that matters.
It's been another episode of The Ben Burnett Show. Have a great day, everybody.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back. You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats.
Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.